The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. My God, so professional. Good evening, everyone. It's 11:02 exactly. Actually, I think about 45 seconds. On the East Coast, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 10:02 p.m. in Minneapolis, where I'm sitting. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to Jim Peters at Night. This is our 26th installment. It's the middle of our eighth week. We had a great show for you tonight. Of course, I got to say that every night, but we do. Presidential candidate and friend Tim Conaway is going to be joining us in about 25 minutes. Tomorrow we have a very special episode regarding the Republican primary debate. So we will start exactly when the debate finishes, but that's scheduled to be our normal starting time, 11 p.m. Eastern. That's what it's scheduled for. So, but we'll see. If they go over, we're not going on. If they cut early for whatever reason, we're starting early. Our panelists are going to be investigator, operative, Don Zorro, and Jeffrey Meyer, the publisher of Kong News and the conservative news aggregator. Those are our panelists. We're going to take your phone calls the entire time. They are not quote-unquote guests. They're coming on right away. As soon as the debate is done, we will talk about the debate. And hopefully, maybe in about an hour, hour and a half, I'll have a pizza afterwards. Because I got to tell you, so, you know, me, I'm really prepared all the time. Around 9:25 local time, about a half an hour, 40 minutes ago, I'm sitting on my desk, I'm typing, and all of a sudden I realize, Jesus, I'm hungry. And then I realize I haven't eaten anything. I barely had anything to eat today. I ate a couple tacos at 1 o'clock. That was it. That's all I've had. And yeah, I'm hungry, and so we might, and when I get hungry, I'm hangry, we might end this a little early, because I need something to eat. Okay, so yeah, I think I ran down everything, all our announcements. Oh, one more announcement, too. I want to make sure I get this in. One moment. I'm having a little problem here with my mouse on my desktop. I don't know what the hell is going on. I just want to reiterate what we did tomorrow. Last night was our first night live on Spreaker. So now you can listen to the show live, audio only. This is only audio on Spreaker, the Spreaker app, which in the live section. So as soon as we go live, we end up on the list and you listen to us live. As soon as we're done, like within like 5 minutes, this audio from the show is posted as an audio podcast on Spreaker, so you can access it on our channel page on the Spreaker app and also on their website too. It's working out fine. So we had problems with the previous service, and like I said, I don't want to badmouth them because they're a really good service, but we have very unusual technical demands here, and we couldn't mesh with them. That's all there is to it. But this is so far, this is working out great. So you can listen to audio. I understand. I don't know why you'd actually want to go to Spreaker to listen to just the audio, because you can, if you're in your car, you can Bluetooth to your radio or your car system and just listen to it off of Rumble or YouTube. And speaking of Rumble and YouTube, I got an update about that too. So I told you last night that about 3 hours after last Thursday, our interview with Patrick Moore, a climatologist about climate change, was posted, we ended up being flagged on YouTube for misinformation. Ha 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 ha. Okay, this afternoon, actually this evening, about 3-4 hours ago, I made a post on our blog explaining this, and also I linked to the page that YouTube recommended we read to make certain that you guys know what climate change is. It's on the United Nations website. And, you know, they've only said, they didn't actually say this on the page, but they have said this in the last few days, that they will need $75 trillion to solve the problem of climate change. Did you hear me? $75 trillion. It will bankrupt the entire world. Now, first of all, before I go on, amazingly, in preparing that blog post, I actually double-checked, and the misinformation flags on that particular video have been removed. They're no longer there. And like I said on the blog post, do you think that YouTube came to their senses? No, no, they didn't. They don't have any senses. No, they didn't at all. So I don't know what's going on there, but they're gone. But I put the page from the UN climate change thing up anyway, because I thought you should read it. I think it's hilarious, because these people, they just downright lie. They're lying, fucking liars. That's what they are. Why? Because they want your $75 trillion. That's why. I don't think they're that stupid, although I think a lot of them are. Like, I think John Kerry actually buys all this bullshit. I think he's bought into hook, line, and sinker because he's stupid. He's really stupid. This man has no business being running anything, let alone the United States government. God in heaven, I'm glad he was not nominated for president, or, you know, that he won. It's like, shit. I mean, isn't an amazing election in 2004? You have the worst speaker, public speaker in Washington, running against the second worst public speaker in Washington. I just couldn't wrap my mind around that. I mean, okay, some of you like George W. Bush. I'm sure he seems like a great guy. I'd love to have a beer with him. Do I want him running the government? No, I don't. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that, because I'm not a Republican. But the Republicans can do better than that. He was not a very good president, period. And he couldn't speak at all. That was actually, you know, I don't have any problem saying that. The guy was an incompetent public speaker. So was John Kerry. John Kerry's been in Washington. Well, you know, he's one of these guys. What is he? I think he's almost 80, if he's not 80 now. And he's been in Washington, what, 44, 45 years? And not only that, he's filthy wealthy. I mean, filthy wealthy. He married two of the most wealthy women in the United States. Unbelievable. The guy's filthy wealthy. Couldn't you just hire like a speech coach or something? I mean, couldn't you learn this a little bit? Maybe it's because, you know, he doesn't have to. He's going to be there forever because of the money, you know? So we're never going to get rid of him, or Dianne Feinstein, or Mitch McConnell, or all these. And notice I'm talking bipartisan here. It's all these people. And Chuck Grassley, bless his heart, is 92 years old, and he's still sharp as a tack. And I don't, you know, people, this happens to people at different phases of their lives, you know. I mean, he could pass for 70 or even less, you know. I just found out today, I just find this amazing, studying up for the debate tomorrow, Martha McCallum was one of the two moderators of the previous debate. She's 59 years old. Have you seen her? I mean, Jesus Christ. She doesn't look, she could pass for 35. She's 59 years old. Christ almighty. I mentioned this to my wife, and my wife said, well, she had work then. I said, well, I can't tell. And she said, well, yeah, you can't tell when the work is good. If they've done the work bad, that's when you can tell. Okay. Point taken. Maybe you're right. I don't know. All I know is she looks fantastic. She doesn't look anywhere close to her age, you know. And people seem to be, I mean, not just living longer, living better longer. You know, first world, man. You know, capitalism, I say. There you go. You know, yeah, you want to go down that democratic socialist road where all of us will be shitty. All of us. And we'll be equal. And it will solve the problem of inequality. We'll all be equal and it'll all be shitty. Seriously, you start to think about this. I mean, here's an example. My wife is going off on a 1-week vacation tomorrow. I'm not going with her. I can't. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on here. I have the show. I got a cat that needs to be tendered after, and we couldn't find anybody to do it. You know, I say, God bless you, girl, my wife, go have fun, you know. And we've done this before. I had a job about 20, 25 years ago where I could never get away, and my wife took umpteen vacations without me. Usually she took a girlfriend, you know. I mean, seriously, you know, it's better that one of us have fun than neither one of us have fun. But that's the way I think, you know. It's like, you know, at least half of us are having fun. You know, go off, you know. No, the liberals, you know, no. We're all, it's equity. The outcome has to be all the same, and we're all going to be equal together, and we're going to be equal in filth. That's what's going to happen. But will it be equal? They'll solve the problem. We'll all be equal. Instead of one of us being filthy rich and the other one of us failing. Okay, and you may say that's a terrible thing. It is a terrible thing for the person that's failing. But for society, that's better than everybody failing. It really is. You can't get around. Yeah, do I look mad? Yeah, I'm mad. Yeah, that pisses me off. Okay, so I was talking about this thing with our interview being flagged as misinformation. Our friend Jazz Shaw on Hot Air today, he wrote a story. Let me pull this up. It's called "Has Bill Gates Bailed Out on the Climate Crisis?" And he and other people, I'm starting to see this all over the place. Well, also the fact that the British Prime Minister, what's his name, Ravi Suvak, I can never get it right. I don't know. Are basically kind of walking back the whole climate change catastrophe hysteria thing. People are starting to figure out, like, here's a quote from Jazz's article, and I do. Jazz, and this is Jazz himself talking, he's not attributable to anybody else. If you push people too far over a subject they might not fully understand but might sympathize with you over, they're going to buck sooner or later. This has been my whole thing about the trans issue. The trans issue ultimately will damage the gay and lesbian community. I'm not going to bother with that alphabet soup bullshit they put out. No, I'm talking about gay and lesbian people and maybe bisexuals, those specific groups of people. The trans issue is going to end up biting them in the butt, because I've noticed this online now. People, you know, basically gay marriage has been accepted by the United States. I know a lot of people, you know, there's some people that don't buy it. I also know there's some people that can't wrap their mind around homosexuality, but it's basically been a settled issue. And all of a sudden, you know, we have trans people being pushed in our face, and we're called transphobic for not accepting it. And they're just yellers. I mean, these people, they're yelling about completely irrational shit. And so then you get a blowback. And I get online, I don't, you know, participate in social media, but I read stuff. And yeah, now people are slamming gay and lesbian people now. And that's because people, and especially people, feel forced into this issue of acceptance. And if you want to push it, put it this way, that community has now gone one step too far. They've decided they're going to legitimize, quote unquote, legitimize this trans issue. And the problem is it wasn't illegitimate in the first place. Nobody really cared. Why? There's so few transgender people. I mean, even the New York Times estimated that the total population of the United States, 0.46%, was transsexual. That's less than one out of every 200 people. I think it's lower than that. I think they're estimating high. There's no surveys done on this yet. There's finally now surveys coming out about the number of homosexual people in the United States, and it appears to be about 7%, which was my guess all along. I was always guessing about 7 to 8%. And that's from all the evidence and all the previous polls about what people thought. But the problem is, and you know, not, it's just not climate change. If you push people far enough into something that seems ridiculous, they will revolt. And then there's people that get caught in the crossfire, and in this case, it's the gay and lesbian people are getting caught in the crossfire of this trans bullshit. You know, the thing is, you know, here's my position. I don't have any trouble with trans people. You want to wear a dress? You want to go, you know, live like a woman? That's fine. But here's the deal. Living like a woman and being a woman are two completely different things. You have to understand that. I have no trouble if you want to live like a woman. If you dress like a woman, I will address you as a she. I will. It's like I'm using the same thing humans have used for hundreds of thousands of years, the visual cue. If you're dressed like a woman, I will address you as she. It's the same thing. I mean, I've told you this before. Years ago, I actually worked with a bunch of drag queens on a regular basis, and it was very simple. When they were in drag, they were she, and when they were off, quote-unquote, off-duty in their normal clothes, they were he. It was because it's simple. You know, you're looking at a woman. Not only that, a lot of those drag queens can be pretty hot, too. It's like, Jesus. I mean, I looked at those guys, holy shit. It's like, wow, you're doing a pretty good job. But you have to understand, and the thing about drag queens and the drag community has been completely misinterpreted too. By and large, most drag queens are basically professional performers. They are not trans people. So they're performing. You know, I don't know how you get sucked into that sort of performing. I think part of it is actually the singing part of it. You know, if you want to sing like Barbara Streisand, maybe it helps to dress up like her. I don't know. I got to admit, that part I could never understand how you were attracted to that sort of thing, but it was definitely a performative function. And most of these guys, off when they were off of work and not, you know, they just wore their regular clothes. And yeah, some of them were gay, some of them weren't. You know, it's a completely separate thing. It's not a trans community thing. Unlike Dylan Mulvaney, the supposed trans guy who got caught up in the Bud Light stuff, he's not even a trans person. He's a drag queen. He's a performer. I mean, as a matter of fact, I would say he's a clown. And if I'm going to use that term in a non insulting manner, technically, so are drag queens. They're clowns. They basically are. You know, it's like you're talking the same thing. You're dressing up in makeup that looks completely different than your normal self. And that's basically what a clown does, you know. And so I don't necessarily use that pejoratively, but they're clowns. Now, Dylan McVaney is a clown. There's no doubt about that. He says he's trans. I actually don't believe him. I don't. I've known enough of these people now to kind of, it's like, I think he's doing this completely for attention and money. And God knows he's actually made a lot of money. That's the scary part. I mean, this guy has no business representing the trans community at all. None. He's about the least authentic trans person you'd ever met. I know trans people, not many, you know. Now, we have Don Zorro coming on the show tomorrow. But he famously asked me on one of my radio shows when I was interviewing him. He said, Jim, how many trans... And him and I are virtually the exact same age, within a few months, 67. He said, you're 67 years old. How many trans people have you known in your entire life? And my answer was 2. And he said the same thing. I've known 2. You know, now, of course, some of them could be in the closet and we don't know, you know, but, you know, they dress up in their private time or whatever, you know, but still, I met a lot of people. I probably met way more people than you. You know, I was talking about this last night. You got guys like Donald Trump, and who else would be on his level? Michael, the other guy who was the mayor of New York, excuse me, Bloomberg. You know, those guys, they've met, I don't know, probably 100,000 people in their lifetime. I mean, that's the thing. You can't actually, most people can't even relate to this. Like, the number of people Donald Trump keeps straight in his head is mind-boggling. And I don't even approach that, but I know way more people. I've met way more people than the average person. I know that. And so, okay, where am I going with that? Well, it's the fact that Dylan Mulvaney is I don't believe that he is a legitimate trans person. I don't. And why the hell would Bud Light do that? You know, I'm watching Jesse Waters a couple weeks ago on Fox News, and he says now he has this guy named Johnny. He sends out Johnny does the same thing for Jesse Waters that Jesse did for Bill O'Reilly years ago. He goes out and he talks to people on the street, and he's at Princeton, I think it is, and he's interviewing this woman who says she's majoring in marketing, and Johnny says, "What do you think of the whole Dylan McVaney and Bud Light thing?" And she said, "Well, I really admire Bud Light for doing that." She said, "I think Dylan McVaney's really cool." And Johnny said, "Yeah, but you understand the sales tanked, right?" And she just smiled. She had nothing to say. That's because for a lot of these kids, the social justice outcome is more important than the sales. And folks, that's nuts. That's crazy. The idea is to sell beer. You're not trying to make a political statement. And beer is the best example of that. Because people, when they drink beer, and the beer they drink has nothing to do with politics. Nothing. And they're trying to make it about politics. It's hilarious. And then they wonder why the sales tanked. And this is really important to understand. There was no organized boycott of Bud Light. None. It's just millions of people just decided, I'm not going to drink this anymore. You know, I don't need anybody to tell me. I'm looking at this fool, this clown, that they're trying to push to get me to buy beer, this ridiculous clown, I'm just not going to do it. You guys can go. And the thing is, let's be honest, there's not that much difference between one brand of beer than another, especially in the United States, where we basically have what I call piss beer. You know, I mean, even Canada has way stronger beer than we do. And you know, from a beer standpoint, it's really kind of pathetic. I kind of like piss beer. It's on a hot summer day. It goes down like water. It's great, you know, but still, the fact of the matter is there's not a lot of difference. So, you know, Bud Light, okay, you're going to emotionally alienate me. All right, I'll go over to Michelob or something. No, Michelob's actually the same company. Or maybe they did go over to Michelob. I mean, Bud Light sales really tanked, and a lot, but all Anheuser-Busch sales tanked a little bit. The company's going to survive this. The brand may not, but the company will. But that's my point, you know? Why are you going to do that stuff? So getting back to Jazz's article, what the point Jazz was trying to make is that the climate change people have been pushing this doom and gloom shit for so long that people are finally starting to wake up. And he's noticed, and I've noticed too, the press is now slowly starting to wake up too. The press is starting to realize that maybe this is crap. Now, I talked yesterday, and there's a link in the blog post I did at Geminite.com for the misinformation thing on YouTube. I actually linked to this thing, and I think maybe I'll put another post up to specifically highlight this too, about the fact that a couple of weeks ago, 1,600 scientists, including two Nobel laureates, signed a declaration saying that climate change is, that the hysteria is crap, that it's bullshit. But, and this, I want to be very precise here. This bears pointing out, a lot of these scientists don't all agree on why it's bullshit. Like, for example, Dr. Moore pointed out in his interview that he thinks there's nothing to it at all, in the sense that more CO2 is better. That's what he thinks. He says he thinks the science has completely proved this, that there's no downside to more CO2. Now, he's talking about carbon dioxide. A lot of people involved in the climate community talk about carbon monoxide, which is a poison gas and doesn't have anything to do with plants growing at all. And also the fact, and Dr. Moore did point this out, that a lot of people confuse CO2 with pollution, and those have nothing to do with each other either. And I've said the kernel of truth in this whole thing is everybody wants a cleaner planet. You know, I do. You know, shit. You know, if the climate change thing stops your company from putting less pollution out in the air from your factories, that's great, I think. You know, if you got that out of it, that's fantastic. But a lot of the scientists don't agree with Dr. Moore. They think that the Earth is warming up because of more carbon dioxide. Their point is that it doesn't really matter. And that's been my point too. And I want to, if you listen to Dr. Moore's interview with me, he'll say the same thing. Virtually nobody doubts the fact that the world is warming up. That's a given at this point. That's pretty much, and I hate to use this word because he brings this up in his book. There's no such thing as scientific consensus unless every single person you're talking to agrees, you know. And so, yeah, because he said a lot of times a consensus, the majority opinion is wrong. This is even one of those times, except as my friend, or not my friend, my drinking buddy at that convention pointed out 10 years ago, that the thing with climate change is that there's a lot of people who say they're on board because it's the only way they get money for their funding for their research. So in that way, that skews the whole thing. People aren't really telling the truth. But, you know, Dr. Moore pointed out over the last 300 years, the Earth has warmed up about 1 degree Celsius, and that's pretty much everybody, that's kind of the consensus scientifically. And so then the question is it warming up because of more CO2? Dr. Moore doesn't think so. There's other people who disagree with him, but that's not the point. The point is nothing bad is going to happen. The hysteria is bullshit. That's the point. And yeah, you know, people should be addressing pollution directly. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't want the atmosphere polluted. I don't think you do either. It's, you know, I'm going to keep harping on this. I got to admit, I'm starting to think this is one of the missions of the show. This climate thing, like I've said previously and during the interview with Dr. Moore, it's the single biggest grift financially that's ever been put on the American public ever. And I wasn't kidding about this when I said the UN said a couple weeks ago during their assembly, they said they need $75 trillion to solve the climate crisis. Did you hear me? $75 trillion. Now, we're the richest nation on earth, and our entire economic output per year is only, I'm not talking about even taxes, I'm talking about everything, is only about $15-16 million. They want five times that amount to solve the climate crisis. No, they don't. They want five times that amount so they can live in absolute luxury. It's a grift. They're taking your money. And Tim's probably coming on here in a second, but I'm gonna end with this. I'm kind of obsessed with the UFO thing. But one of the things I'm really interested about, and I noticed this many years ago, is the way the UFO phenomena and issue, the way it intersects with politics and government. Because a lot of people think that the reason we're having this slow reveal of UFOs, and ultimately will be extraterrestrials. I mean, like Christopher Melina said, the guy, word, the deputy State Department guy, like he said, no one in the government wants to talk about the A word, which is aliens. If you have crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft, they have to come from somewhere, and that means there's aliens. If aliens are inside driving them, they're remotely controlling them. That's for sure. So the reason I'm bringing this all up is because a lot of people think that the slow reveal of the extraterrestrials now that's going to happen over the next few years is going to be because the government is going to say, oh, look, the extraterrestrials, the aliens are evil. We need money to fight them. That's going to be another one of these grifts where the government is going to say, no, we're going to be in a potential war with the aliens, and we need to raise taxes. That's what a lot of, and I think there's a good possibility this is going to happen. There's a lot of people in the UFO community that don't think the aliens are benign. A lot of people think that they may be malevolent. But the fact is, right now, the only thing we know is they've been around for a long time and they have not killed us yet, where they probably could really easily. So if you're going to say, well, we need money to fight the aliens, bullshit. You do not. You know, shit. You know, Reagan tried that clandestinely. All right, we got. All right, Tim Conaway's here, but he's not really. All right, I'm gonna try putting him on the screen. We don't have a picture. Tim, are you okay. There? Are you?
Yeah.
There?
Let me try to do something here.
Okay. I could run the nice little intro while you do that.
Yeah,
I'll do that. You? Here we go. So professional. And the portions, they're enormous. Hey, I'm punchy tonight, Tim. I'm just warning you.
Okay, well, I'm trying to troubleshoot my camera, which is, it's telling me it's being used by another app, although you're the only thing I got going on. So,
yeah,
So who knows?
Oh, I hope you got more going on than me. I mean,
oh, this is it.
I can't really get it up anymore. So I said that in public, didn't I? Holy shit. All right. Now I'm going to tell you people right off the bat here. If you have questions for Tim or want to talk to him or want to talk to us, give us a call. You go to this right here, jimatnight.com/call. You push the big blue button and you check out your camera and mic and you push join and you're on with us. That's what it takes, or you're in the queue anyway. And if you show me your junk, I will kick you out. We cannot do that. So YouTube will ban us. Not that they've come close already. I swear to God, Tim. So I don't know if you know this. I had Patrick Moody Patrick Moore, the climatologist, on Thursday night. You still there,
yeah.
Tim?
I'm
here. We 3 hours after that interview posted, archived, YouTube flagged it for misinformation.
Well.
Yeah. So I'm famous now.
Well, they know what they're doing.
Oh, of course they do. That's right. And they know all about the climate, too. They're experts, you know. All right, I got a tea. We got a tea. Little tea.
Yeah, for some reason, my camera is not...
We can do this audio if you want. We do that. We've done that before.
Okay. I've got my video hooked up here, and...
When you got to the preview page, could you see yourself?
To the preview page, I don't even know. You know, I'm a tech fool.
Okay, so when you went to jimandnight.com and pushed the big blue button, next thing that comes up, there's a preview page where you can choose and check your camera and mic, right? You got that, right?
Okay. Here's check your camera.
Right.
Okay. Mic and speaker, and what am I supposed to do here? You're about to join the stream, and...
All right, here, click on the camera dropdown, and you should have two choices, your camera and no video. If you have more than two choices, that means you have more than one camera hooked up. And you might have a virtual camera, too, depending on what you're working on.
Here's my camera, and... Oh, it's saying camera, no video. So whatever that means.
That's the only choice you have?
Yeah, I can't. It's not giving me anything else.
That means your camera is not actually hooked up to your machine.
It's not actually hooked up, but I've got my camera on here and...
Huh.
In my...
I'm going to start asking you questions.
Okay. It's let's just do that because I can't figure this out.
Yeah. Okay. So that's okay. That's right. First question, when Reagan said the government is too big and makes too much money, was that true?
Well, yeah. and it's, you know, much worse now. The government is involved in so many things that, constitutionally, it doesn't have the right to be involved in.
Yeah.
It was not intended to be the answer to everything, to get involved in all kinds of social and cultural issues. It was intended to be a kind of bridge between the individual states and the things that no individual state could manage for the rest of the states. So, transportation, the military, the postal service,
right?
The interstate commerce, not the economy itself, not businesses and industry themselves, but managing the movement of goods from one state to another. It's a very limited set of things that the federal government is supposed to be doing. And it's actually supposed to be a subset to the states themselves. It's there as an aid to the states to handle these matters that no single state should be handling on behalf of the others.
What happened along the way? I mean, 1905, the first income tax was started, 2%.
Yeah, well, that income tax, and they could have taxed people all along. They do have the right to levy taxes.
Yeah, but a lot of people thought in 1905, they said, well, this is a slippery slope, and 55 years later, the top tax rate was 92%. Now, granted, hardly anyone paid that, but still, you know.
Well, yeah, when they started collecting taxes, they realized, oh, we can get money for this thing and that thing and the other thing. What really happened was all of these social ideas came into government, the government handling social ideas.
Yeah.
The Great Depression was the number one cause of a lot of this stuff. The Roosevelt that was in office for way too long, Theodore Roosevelt, to me, is one of the great presidents of all time.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Franklin Roosevelt, it was just one social program after another. Now, the nation was in crisis, but instead of doing something to help business and industry, they created all these programs to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And that was wrong. You know, business and industry kind of created the situation and the way they operated. And mainly it was the stock market, which I think is a bogus indicator of of the how our economy is doing.
Yeah, it is.
You know, business and industry needed to fix it. Social Security came out of that era, as well as these other social programs.
Yeah.
And then it just grew and grew from there. The Democrats, you know, aligned themselves with all kinds of things.
Tim, I got to point this out, talking about Social Security. When Social Security was enacted in 1936, the collection, the age for first collection was 61, but the average American lived to 62.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, that's great.
Right. And again, it was a stopgap measure, not intended to be a lasting measure. But once it was in, it became a political tool.
Yeah.
And that's the other part, is like, we're giving you all these benefits. We're giving you all these services. So let's, you know, keep voting for us. It's just like this union thing, this Biden making a fool of himself with the, you know, standing out on the picket lines with the union people.
For 12 minutes. He did it for 12 minutes. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that was 12 minutes too long.
It was. That's right.
you know, and saying, well, because, you know, they need their fair share of what's going on. Well, if you want your fair share of the profits that a company makes, buy stock.
Yeah.
That's how you share in the earnings. Just because you work there doesn't mean you get to share in the profits of the place.
Yeah.
What Joe is talking is just outright socialism.
Right.
The company made all this money. They need to share it with everybody.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing that up. That's the actual definition of socialism. Right.
Exactly. So, and you know, and then they've got, Corrine, the puppet, Pierre puppet, being asked by reporter after reporter, well, does him standing with these people say, you know, he's aligning with the union? Well, he's always been for the unions, but we're not in the negotiations. We're not. Well, you got the president of the United States standing with these guys.
Yeah.
And he's also tried in the past couple of years, there are lots of union pension funds that through mismanagement and possible corruption are going bust or have gone bust. And he wants to use tax dollars to bail them out. Well, that's unfortunate for all those people that's happened, but it's not a government issue. That's private industry. These are private unions. And it's, you know, the unions need to look at how that was mismanaged and, you know, take some action that way. But it's not something that tax dollars are there to solve. But that's Joe's solution, is we'll take tax dollars and we'll put it over here. We'll take tax dollars and pay off student loans, or we'll forgive student loans and, you know, lose a lot of money that's already been paid out that should be paid back.
It's terrible because, yeah, the people who are... Now the American public is going to pay off these loans. And like, well, first of all, didn't you know you had to pay it back when you signed up? I mean, shit, you know? And secondly, yeah, there's a lot of working class people who are now paying off the loans of a bunch of really affluent students. It's completely unfair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's again, forgiving those loans to strictly as a political ploy.
Buying votes.
Basically, these loans are something that shouldn't have happened in the first place. The government supported, government backed student loans, some kind of financial support for college students coming from the commercial world, the corporate world, the industrial world, in return for these people coming to work for them, would be a much better situation, but not another government program to put money into people's hands. And so again, all these areas are things that the government was never supposed to take on. When they take them on, they make a mess of it, and that mess ends up costing us more money.
And you're right. That's actually the, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if they could accomplish anything, but that's the problem. The I totally agree with you, but we give the government all this money to solve the problems, and the problems never get solved. I got two examples I want to give you right here, because one of them kind of made me think of you. First of all, you know, so I had Dr. Moore on last week. In the last couple days, the UN has said, they just wrapped up their assembly. They have declared that just for them to solve the climate emergency, they're going to need $75 trillion. Trillion. $75 trillion. I mean, our entire economic output of the richest nation on earth is only about $15 trillion a year. They're going to need $75 trillion. And the second thing, though, the thing that made me think of you is Dr. Moore said during his interview, he said that, you know, now his argument is that that CO2 is not causing the temperature rise of the earth. As a matter of fact, he says it's actually the opposite. The temperature rise of the earth is making more CO2. But he said the temperature rise of the earth is primarily due to the wobble of the earth's rotation around the sun, which you've been talking about for years.
Yeah.
He said they've proved that now.
There are all kind of natural causes that are going on. And, you know, the basic thing is that the earth is not a set standard environment. There's a range of things that happen. And over the course of recent earth history, and I'm talking 100,000 or, 200,000 years.
Yeah.
There have been changes back and forth with the climate. We've had an ice age. We've had warm periods. Deserts used to be meadows and savannas and the ocean used to, Southern California, Death Valley, and other parts of Southern California were once under the ocean. The earth doesn't stand still because people build structures on it.
Right.
And so there's that thinking. There's a great tool, and unfortunately I don't have the name of it in front of me, but and I mentioned it before. I'll try to get it to you. Maybe you can put
I know what you're going to talk about here. Could you send me the link on that? I'll put it on our blog. Yeah.
The scientists who did this took 14,000 different pieces of information and put it together into some kind of formula, algorithm, and they have a chart where they've got all the factors in it, the CO2, the using fossil fuels, using coal to burn make electricity, all these different factors are in it that affect the climate. And if you adjust stuff in there, you can see what the expected outcome would be from those adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do nothing at all, by the end of the century, the average temperature is expected to rise by 3.4 degrees Celsius. If you slide over, remove all the use of all fossil fuels as of today from that, all fossil fuels for vehicles, all fossil fuels for generating electricity, then by the end of the century, average temperature will increase 2.7 degrees Celsius. Oh, wait a minute. We just turned off all these things that people say are killing the planet, but the temperature still rises.
Yeah.
That 0.7 degrees is about 20% of the expected rise. So all of this fossil fuel use could have some impact of it, probably has some kind of impact along with everything else, but it's only 20% of the total. The rest of the total is pretty much the natural environment doing what it does on the Earth. And yeah, the Earth's axis has moves 31 feet, which in the grand scheme of the Earth doesn't seem like much, but a 31 shift foot shift in the axis gives a different kind of exposure. The perihelions and nanhelions in the Earth's oval orbit of the sun, we're not on a perfect circle, it's more of a big wide oval, brings us closer to the sun for longer periods of time where we're at now, because the Earth isn't always, or the sun isn't always at the center of that rotation. The Earth's rotation moves, the center of it moves slightly back and forth. So, you know, we've got all kinds of different factors going on. The solar flares are at a peak right now. There are things happening on the sun that astronomers have never observed before, with the radiation or these solar bursts that create these rings of radiation at the top of the sun. So, you know, the universe is not a constant, and the sun is not a constant. The Earth is not a constant.
And, you know, you just alluded to something there, too, and I think this is really important. We barely know anything. It's like we're just learning this shit. I mean, 20 years ago, there was no proof that there's any planets outside of our solar system. Mm-hmm. Now they're finding like several hundred of them a day. It's like, You know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, no, we don't know nothing. I mean, yeah. So, yeah, you're saying they're seeing shit on the sun they've never seen before? Yeah, I bet they are. No shit.
Yeah. So, you know, and so that's one of the problems. We like everything set, you know. And, you know, we build buildings and we want them to last forever. Well, buildings aren't even intended to last forever, but we just think, oh, you know, we can control this, which is foolish.
Yeah. And all right. So answer me this. Why the hell are humans so arrogant? What is our problem? You would like to think that, you know, people would figure this out. I mean, you're right. It's a constantly changing environment. And sometimes maybe it doesn't change in our favor, you know, but why can't people figure this out? Is it just because we think we're gods? Is that the...
Well, yeah, I think so. That's probably truer than any other thing about us. We are in charge, and, you know, in order to survive and to grow and to create, we have to have that. There has to be some of that arrogance and some of that feeling of omnipotence in there. And as you were saying earlier on the show, it's like, well, to get grant money, you know, you don't go in and say, we think that it's possible that it might be this situation if we research it a little bit more. They go in for that grant money saying, we can prove that such and such is going to happen. And that's, oh great, then here's your grant money.
Right.
You know, they don't go in with a, well, maybe this can happen kind of approach. So, and that's why even the scientists who, you know, maybe they know better underneath the surface are building stuff up more than it needs to be. They're taking their stand because that's, you know, where their money is coming from. And, you know, it's just like the people in Washington think, well, we'll solve this problem, we'll solve that problem. These people, you know, left to their own devices, could not solve a daily problem. There are people in Congress that I think don't have the wherewithal to be able to go in and open a bank account.
No shit.
You know, and yet they're going to solve all the social and scientific problems of the world.
Well, yeah, even the thing about the UN. So let's say we actually do give the UN $75 trillion. Are they going to solve the problem? No. Well, first of all, there's no problem to solve. But secondly, no, they won't. They can't do it.
The UN doesn't do anything.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't actually, it's been collecting money for a long time. And whenever there's a problem, what they do is they set up a panel like this panel that you've talked about.
Right.
They set up a panel to study this thing or to come up with this thing. You know, the war in Ukraine, they set up some panel to study that. And it's just like the panel to study the sanctions in Iraq and the panel to study or in Iran, the panel to study that. They set up these panels that need money in addition to the $3.5 billion a year that the United States gives the UN just for operating costs. And that's 22% of the UN budget.
Right.
One of the 197 countries in the UN pays 22% of their budget. We've given them like an additional $9 billion to run these other committees and these other little organizations that just funnel money through. They're, you know, they're in-betweens, they're middlemen for all this stuff, but they don't actually do anything. So I would tell the UN, you know, have a bake sale.
Yeah.
You know, we're not contributing any money to this nonsense because you won't actually accomplish anything. You don't have the capability. And, you know, I think it's a waste that we spend any money with them.
So do I.
Or be involved with them.
Hey, Tim, before you go on, I've never actually asked you this before. I don't talk a lot about the Ukraine war here on this show because I got to admit, I don't know what to think about it. I'm really conflicted. Where do you stand on that, our involvement there?
Well, we're way too involved in it. You know, the whole thing seems to have started because for some reason, we want to bring the Ukraine into NATO, and NATO wasn't supposed to expand into that area, especially bordering Russia. And, you know, there was news today that a Russian I don't know if he's ambassador to the UN or the US, had said that if Ukraine would commit to not joining any alliance or bloc, that they could recognize Ukraine as its own nation, because originally they were saying Ukraine is actually part of Russia. It's not an independent country. They would recognize it as an independent nation as long as it doesn't join any alliance or bloc,
right,
meaning join NATO. And that was also part of when the Soviet Union broke up and Ukraine gained its independence. Part of their constitution or part of their declaration was that, you know, they would not join any of these blocks. So that's the whole cause of this thing. We've spent way too much of our own money that we need here. And you can sympathize with Ukraine. I don't like Russia. I don't like Vladimir Putin. I think it's a dangerous country, but, you know, all those billions of dollars could have been spent here helping American business and industry or actually fixing the roads instead of talking about it, improving our electrical grids, which is, if we're going to be this all-electric nation, we need to have better and more secure grids, and we need to have better and more secure ways of producing electricity. And I'm a big proponent of nuclear power for that. But so the Ukraine is it's another, it's, I don't know, it's some kind of show that we're putting on to Europe, or that, you know, that we're supposed to be showing Russia how much we're committed to them not doing something. But it's a very confused situation. And the other NATO countries were reluctant to get involved later on because they're right there. You know, they're in a lot more danger than we are from this. So, it's time. We've spent enough money, and no matter how much we spend, Ukraine is never going to defeat Russia in a military engagement. Russia's just too big, got too many people, got too much. I mean, almost all of the money, the government money in Russia has been spent on the military over the years. Besides the, you know, the corrupt, the money that's gone to the corrupt oligarchy over there. So, so yeah, I say let's cut off the funding. Let's resolve this some other way. And certainly none of the countries that border Russia are supposed to be in NATO. That's, that was supposed to be part of the deal.
Right.
So let's honor that.
Yeah. My impression is that is Putin's big, big complaint. He does not want Ukraine or any of those countries in NATO. And I'm, my impression is if Ukraine agreed to do that, not go in, I think the war would end. I think the, I think that he would consider that a victory, but I don't know. What do I know? I'm just a guy on the stupid internet TV. Hey, I do have to want to bring something up. You just touched on this. So I asked Dr. Moore during an interview, sorry to keep referencing this, but I found it really fascinating. I asked him, I said, you know, he quit Greenpeace. I said, do you have any regrets of anything you did while you were there? And he said, yeah, I have one huge regret. He said, I opposed nuclear power. And he said, my opposition was completely wrong. He's also a huge proponent of nuclear power. And he brings up the master of the obvious shit, and that is, it's really, really safe. The only single accident we've ever had on the entire planet that meant anything was Chernobyl. You know, and he also, he gave me some details on this too. He gave all of us. He said, I didn't know this, that it was not in the normal operation of the plant. They were actually running an experiment, and that's why the whole thing went to hell. He called 3 Mile Island, which I agree, he called it a nothing burger. He said that was bullshit. You know, the plant got damaged. That was it, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's saying, you know, people keep talking about how dangerous this is. He said, no, this isn't dangerous at all.
And if you're complaining about burning coal or, you know, using these other fuels to generate power, if you're complaining about the pollution that is caused by the mining and manufacturing of materials for solar energy, and I'm a big proponent of solar energy on individual buildings and stuff. I don't think solar grids are the answer to these giant solar yards are the answer to supplying the grid, but individual homes and buildings and stuff, that's good. But for the big thing, nuclear power is very safe. I worked at a place where we had a project of packing up and moving out equipment from a nuclear facility. And none of it was hazardous waste or hazardous material. None of it was irradiated. But the safety protocols that we had to meet in order to do that were pretty impressive, I thought. I mean, it created kind of an extra burden to do the job, but what the heck, if that's the safety thing. And the way the people who ran it, I mean, there was not 1 millimeter of give on anything in that. So, you know, the people who run these things know how safe, you know what they have to do. They take it very serious. They're very strict. And France gets 75% of its power from nuclear energy.
Yeah.
And they've never had a problem.
Right.
It works really great. And ultimately, it's less expensive. And the only downside is the waste, which people have figured out how to handle.
That's right. I was just going to say that. The thing about France doing is they've, over the last 20, 30 years, they've pretty much figured out all the problems involved in this. Including handling the waste, right?
So you know, it's all taken care of. It doesn't produce any pollutants other than, you know, the spent rods, and those last, I mean, ages, basically. But you know, we shy away from that because of all this negativity, the left leaning negativity on it, which is unjustified. We can, and again, you know, if we took half of the money that we've spent in Ukraine and put it into nuclear power, you know, we could handle plugging in 300 million EVs, you know, which again are creating a lot of pollution through the construction of the lithium ion batteries and the eventual, you know, there are companies that are looking at ways to recycle that material and reuse that material, but, and there are also companies looking at better forms of batteries, but, you know, EVs, it's a myth that they are pollution free.
Well, yeah, duh. I mean, right now, 80% of the power in the United States, electrical power, is generated by fossil fuels. If you think plugging in an electric car is, you know, is pollution free, you're nuts.
Right. Right.
I don't understand. I think people are just deluding themselves. You know. No, actually, from a purely technical level, the idea of an electric car is actually pretty cool, and I'm sure you know this. In the 1920s, 100 years ago, there was a run for a few years where electric cars, even then, were quite popular. And that kind of fell out by the wayside. But, of course, the world was different then, and you didn't, you know, couldn't plug anything in. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, an electric vehicle by itself is you know, it doesn't generate any emissions. It's quieter. It, you know, there's a lot of pluses to it. The vehicle doesn't have as many moving parts,
right?
So there's less maintenance.
But
they don't exist in a vacuum.
You know,
you have to be able to draw that energy from someplace.
That's right.
And especially like if you're an EV owner and you want to plug in at a charging station, and some government official is making a photo op tour of the U.S. in a vehicle, and her people go ahead to all the charging stations and block them off, driving gas-powered vehicles ahead of her, block the charging stations. You know,
and that, of course, that actually happened.
yeah. You know, it's just. And this is, you know, we're talking about the arrogance of these people. The people in the federal bureaucracy are worse than the politicians who think they know it all and can do it all. The people in the federal bureaucracy have basically a lifetime guaranteed job. And no matter what stupid thing they do, they'll keep their jobs.
Yeah.
And the worst thing that can happen to them is they would leave and go into the private sector, where they would make probably more money. Although people in the government jobs make a huge, they're much better paid than people on the average, much better paid than people doing that same kind of work in the private sector.
Right, but and like you said, they have virtually no ramifications for fucking things up.
Right.
They hardly anyone ever sees any consequences. I want to point this out really quick, Tim. If you want to talk to Tim and I, if you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call. Go to jimandnight.com/call, and you can talk to Tim. You can't see him.
Yeah, I don't know. This worked before. I've got the same setup, but I'll have to look at this. Technical difficulties have been the key words here for the last month or so in my world in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we should, and let, you know, you have a website, ConawayForPrez.com, and right now it's a little sketchy. It's like you can't really get into it. I mean, hopefully we'll have the problem solved in a few days, but, you know.
Yeah, that's, again, the technical problems.
Yeah.
We didn't have any technical problems traveling to and from Alabama, some weather problems that one part in the travel, but we went from Northern Central Time to Southern Eastern Time, and then to Southern Central Time, all in one day.
And
I think that was like, I'm sure we experienced some deja vu and maybe some other vus in there. That was like parallel universes crossing over. And then coming back, of course, it was the reverse of that, but it didn't seem to reverse the effect
whatsoever. So you got jet lag then? It's like,
we left and ended up in the same time zone, but I just felt like, you know, there were things going on around us that I, you know, didn't usually see, that maybe we were experiencing one of those other brains and the string theory. That are merging over into other parts of our life. I hadn't been on a commercial flight in ages. And so going to the airport, it's worse than it was the last time, going through all that stuff. The people who work for the airlines are very nice, but the airlines themselves are the same, scumbags that they've always been. We were sitting, my legs are so short, I barely have room for a knee joint in the middle of the leg. And I the seat in front of me was so close that I felt like I didn't have room to sneeze.
Yeah.
And then I was sitting in an exit row on one of the flights, and I'm sitting there and I'm put my legs out and I'm thinking, what's different about this plane? And I realized I was in an exit row, and there was a guy across the aisle who, if he hadn't been a football player, a pro football player, he should have been. He missed out because he was like 6'6", and not a fat guy, but just a huge guy. And I thought, this guy could not fit. He didn't fit in the exit row space. He could not have got into the other space on, into the other seats. There's no way. And I think, man, they've squeezed it up to get more people on there, fewer flights, and they wonder why people go nuts.
Isn't that amazing? Like, why do people don't like this? Yeah, well, shit, have you sat in this seat?
The seats are narrow. There's no space. And I mean, if you've got any kind of claustrophobia, it was one of these smaller planes that we were on. I had to duck my head. I'm 5'6" tall. I had to duck my head getting onto the plane. It's like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
It was a great family visit, and Alabama is a great, beautiful state, great place to be. But just the airline thing, man, there's got to be some other way to travel.
My sister's a travel agent. She says the airlines are now the Greyhound bus service of the 21st century. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about here, is like, yeah, people used to travel by Greyhound bus 50, 60 years ago, and it was pretty shitty.
Well, as I recall, there was leg room, and the
seats
were comfortable.
You have a point there. At least it was more comfortable. That's right. I never thought of that. Oh, my God.
Ride to Cincinnati on the bus, and it was nice.
Yeah.
So that's, that's my travel story.
Yeah.
I became a great granduncle. Once again, I have great grandnieces and nephews, but while we were there, a great grandniece was born.
Oh, that's fantastic. Is that the reason you went?
No, it was, she came early.
Oh.
I think just because we were there. When we'd made our plans, we didn't realize the timing. And then, so that just made it special.
Congratulations. That's pretty cool. She wanted to come out early to see Uncle Tim.
To let Uncle Tim hold her and, see her little baby's hands and feet are like, they're like fully formed. They look just like hands and feet. The rest of the baby, you can tell there's going to be development that has to go on. But
yeah.
I've always thought their hand, that they come out, their hands and feet are ready to work, ready to move. If they had to, they could get up and walk. If they had to use their hands to grub for food or whatever, they're ready to go.
Or mine cobalt.
I'm a terrible person. Yeah, well, no, if you've seen pictures of those kids in Africa.
Oh my God! It's what the hell? What are we doing? It's like shit. It's terrible.
Standing in this mud, his own mineral stuff. And, you know, they stand in it all day. They dig this stuff out with their hands. And so we can have batteries for electric cars.
Yeah, yeah. If it isn't actual slavery, it's one step away from it. That's the way I look at it.
When you're hiring, 10-year-old, 12-year-old kids, even if you're paying them something, that's wrong.
That's wrong, right. Hey, Tim, let's end with this. Now, you are obviously not going to be in the debate tomorrow night. However, you are not affiliated with any a political party, or I think your party is called the No Party, if I'm right.
No Party.
No Party, right. So do you have any thoughts about what's going to happen? I am, my personal thing is, it's a performance,
These aren't debates in the true sense of a classic debate format, where you got, you come up and you make your case for something. This is just a chance for these people to stand up and do their, puff piece presentation about what's going on. In a debate, you don't really confront the other party. You might refute what they say, but you refute with evidence, in a true debate. They don't really tear into the other guy because they don't want to be torn into. They're all thin-skinned, they're wimps. The people in politics are not leaders. They're not, the best and the brightest do not go into politics. It's the below average. Look at Joe, who, will tell you that he was the valedictorian of, every class that he was in when he was raised in the synagogues and in the Black community and all the, in the Latin community, all the three communities that he was raised in at the same time, all those lies, he was at the bottom. And that's where most of these people come from. They can't function in real life.
Right.
So they're in the bottom.
I have expanded on Woody Allen's joke. That is, those who can't do teach, those who can't teach, teach Jim, and those who can't teach Jim go into politics.
Yeah, that's exactly true. So yeah, it's just another show for these people. I don't know what they get out of it. The network gets, it gets some viewership, but I can't imagine, who is tuning into this that's going to make a difference for these people. Only the diehard partisan people or the fans of these people are going to tune in. I don't think anybody else that they haven't already got a backing from is going to tune in and say, gee, I wonder which one of these people I want. I think the American people are just fed up with the game. It's like a game. Who wins? It's like one of these reality shows, who's going to pick The Bachelor.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Let's Make a Deal. I've told you that. I watched that in the afternoon. It's like, I think the contestants on there can probably do a better job than the people on the debate stage, but whatever. Yeah. Hey, let me ask you really quick before we go here. Can you see me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Good, that's good. Not that I'm worth looking at, but I was just curious. I don't know how that works.
Your show looks great. I really like it. I enjoy tuning in.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I love having you on. So, it's like I told you, we're going to check in with you every month, 6 weeks or so. To find out how things are going and stuff. So thank you, Tim. I'm sorry to couldn't see you because, you're a handsome man. You're a very attractive man,
So. No, that's, that's easy to say when there's a blank screen.
Yeah, I guess. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you soon, okay? I really enjoyed this. Thank you very much. Even though we couldn't see you, it still was very entertaining, and you're a smart guy. So people should vote for you. I'm just going to bring that up, too. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim. Good to see you.
Okay, you take care, man. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. Right. It's like a transition almost. Did you see that? Our thanks to Tim Conaway. Very entertaining man. Always like talking to him. It's great. And he has some good ideas too. It's actually not even good ideas. I could even say not even great ideas. It's just stuff that, you know, like he was talking about the overreach of the federal government. Well, that's built into the Constitution. This has all been so totally twisted what we've ended up doing here. And it would run way better if we just stuck to, and that's his point. It would run way better if we just stuck to what it was the original plan, you know? And, oh, come on. $75 trillion to the UN. I mean, Tim is absolutely right. The UN does absolutely nothing. It's like all it does, they form committees. They get together and form committees, then they go to lunch, and then at the end of their day during the assembly, then they hire the hooker. That's what happens. So, I mean, I didn't have to tell you this. So it's made the news about the fact that hookers, prostitutes from all over the world come to New York City during the General Assembly because most of those guys are from highly repressive countries. And, man, they come to New York City and all of a sudden they're not so repressed. You know, Jesus Christ. All right, before we end here, I want to address one thing I said last night. So I was talking, hold on just a second. I want to address my notes here. Shit. What the hell? What am I doing? I'm not going to address my notes. I'm having a little mouse problem. Last night I was talking about the fact, and I had a friend who watched last night who said, well, you know, you're coaching America. You're coaching the world. Yeah, okay, maybe I am, you know. I said about the fact that, yeah, you know, the thing is, life is full of problems, but you should choose your problems. I did say that. And then it occurred to me afterwards, well, you can't choose all your problems. Yeah, like if you get raped, you didn't choose that problem, you know. Or, you know, shit happens, you know. But my point was that your life is going to be filled with problems no matter what. So you might as well gravitate or choose parts of your life that are most conducive to your personality. And that's why I said, you know, the thing is, but you know, everything worth doing is hard. And so you might as well pick something that's conducive to you and you think you might enjoy, because it's going to be hard either way. And no, you don't have any choice about whether you get raped or not. You don't, you know. And I don't buy, you know, people do say, there's some people who say, you know, that nothing is put to chance. I actually don't believe that. I don't think that's true. I think some things are. I remember reading a couple of years ago about a woman who said, who had a near-death experience, and she said that she went to wherever the hell those people go, Valhalla, and she said what she learned is that, you know, she said that our lives, you know, if you're sent back to Earth as a soul to enter another body, you know, if you're reincarnated, your life is partly planned out and also partly chance. That there's no big grand scheme per se. There's part of a scheme. And that always attracted me because I thought, well, that's exactly the way what life works. Part of it is planned out and part of it isn't, you know, and then how those things end up, you know, coalescing with each other. That's basically what your life becomes. You know, you don't have control over all of it. So no, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if you were raped, that you chose that problem. You didn't. You know, but the fact is, a lot of life is stuff you choose, and you know, you should choose the problems that are conducive to what you want to accomplish and what you want to do, because you're going to have problems either way. If you don't choose those problems, they will be chosen for you. You know, and I suppose there's some, I mean, gamblers will say this too. There's some maybe some truth to the fact that, you know, if you don't choose the problems, they choose you. I don't know. Maybe there is. Anyway, it occurred to me that, you know, that what I said might have come off as kind of callous, and it did. Yeah, I was partially wrong, and I just wanted to correct that. So tomorrow night, we got the debate coming up. We got Don Zorro and Jeff Meyer join us on the panel here. We're going to discuss the debate. That the last show we did this was about an hour. I don't expect this one to be that long because it's like, seriously, what are we gonna, you know, Tim is right. It's pretty, we've all pretty much figured out this is all bullshit at this point. So, you know, we might have some fun making fun of the bullshit. We're going to take your calls the entire time. Somebody should have called him and asked Tim his question. You know, kind of pissed me off, but whatever. We're going to take your calls the entire time we're on tomorrow night. And the two panelists, they're joining me right away. No monologue, none of that sort of shit. We're coming on exactly as that debate ends, which is scheduled to end in our normal starting time. But we'll see. If it ends early, we'll start early. If it ends late, we'll start late. So that's the way it works. That's tomorrow night. Thursday night, Bigfoot investigator Larry Newman will be joining us, and we'll be talking about Bigfoot. And you know, I know you like that. Honest to God, I don't know what to think about Bigfoot. I'm leaning toward the fact that Bigfoot's real. And so my friends who know that I'm the UFO conspiracy theorist, they said, you're just kidding. You don't know about Bigfoot. No, I don't. I mean, Larry says he's seen Bigfoot through an infrared camera. Larry will tell us on Thursday night that in the last expedition he went on, one member of his party says he saw the Bigfoot. He didn't, but one member of his party does. And so, you know, and also the fact that too many people have seen Bigfoot, and most of those people are not chasing after Bigfoot. So I have a tendency to think this is real, but, you know, this like I was saying the other night, this creature, if this is true, if this creature is real, it's way smarter than us. It's avoided capture for hundreds of years. Jesus Christ, you know, shit. So, and then you have to assume there's more than one of them, obviously. So, although there may not be a lot, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I've heard that and who knows how they figure this stuff out, but supposedly the Bigfoot investigators, I've heard them investigate the fact there might be 8,000 Bigfoot in the United States. In the forest. And that's not a lot when you consider the size of the American forest. And what am I talking about ahead of time? I don't know a shit about Bigfoot. I know about the UFOs. I don't know about Bigfoot. I don't. And that's why we have Larry on. Larry's very entertaining. You'll like him. So Larry's joining us on Thursday. So there we go. That's our show tonight. I'm Jim Peters. This is Jim Peters, and I don't want to thank you folks for watching. I really appreciate it. We haven't had a lot of people watching the live feed, but viewership of the archive shows is really picking up. Matter of fact, I think so far we've had 2,500 people watch the one with Dr. Moore. So I appreciate that. So we'll see you tomorrow. Whenever we start, as soon as that debate's done. So here we go. I'm out.